By the late 1950s, trams were being removed from the streets of Sydney, and young DMR engineer Brian Pearson landed the challenge of designing the conversion of the tram lines on the bridge to roadway.
Bradfield, when he designed the bridge, allowed for four lines of rail, two on the western side and two on the eastern side. The eastern rail tracks were used by trams. Bradfield's idea was that the rail system on the eastern side would serve the peninsula. It never eventuated. When trams were removed from Sydney, the ones that were running across the Harbour Bridge were also redundant, and the tracks were offered by the government to the DMR, as there was no further use for them for rail or tram traffic. So the DMR, because of increasing road traffic, decided that they should be converted to two road lanes. Amongst the work done by direct control were the toll barriers, which had to be erected for the two new lanes at the northern end of the bridge. And these were designed and built by the Department Central Workshop at Granville. And the workshop also erected the barriers, but the erection couldn't be commenced until I had finished the road work at that end, or the bridge work actually, because it was a viaduct coming up from Innes Road. The tunnel had to be bridged so that the roadway could continue. The two lanes they bifurcated in effect. You could either travel across the circular quay structure or you could travel straight ahead into the city itself. Now, to travel straight ahead, we had to design and build a bridge over the Argyle Cut. That's the old convict-built cut. Also, associated with that work was the construction of a building, an office in effect, for the toll collectors at that end. And that building was on the eastern side of the new work and was designed for the DMR by a firm of architects.
Here's Peter Lardner-Smith commenting on the design of the new 1958 toll booths.
In my view, the 58-59 toll cabins were the best ones, or the best looking cabins ever made, because they had a Art Deco look about them. They were a deep turquoise in colour, the panelling, and they had stained timber lateral slatting down the front, a very stylish over canopy, and they really look good. The current toll cabins and toll canopies we have today weren't nearly as attractive as those ones of the 1958 design. They were really well designed, and we only have this relic of them left at Milsons Point.
Richard Power, former toll controller, recalls the added safety features on these new toll booths.
They just looked like the front of a boat. They were wide near the toll cabin and they went down to a rounded point farther out on the road, about 3 metres, 4 metres away. The ones on the fixed toll cabins were made of concrete and they were designed low at the approach point. That's at the where the driver would first come to it, and then they rose on an angle towards the toll cabin. If the car's wheel went over the prow into the recess inside the prow and the momentum of the vehicle went along, it would slowly tip the car upwards onto its side so that it didn't hit the toll cabin. I don't think I ever saw any incident.
In 1960, in yet another bid to relieve traffic congestion on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, the toll was modified and passengers no longer had to pay. Rather, a single coin charge per car was made. As part of streamlining toll collection, the issuing of tickets was replaced with an electronic red or green light indicator system, and cash registers were installed in the toll collection booths in 1962. By the late 1960s, the DMR had installed what could be seen as an early version of an electronic system to register tolls. Peter Lardner-Smith explains the nuts and bolts of this new system.
A contract was let to the Plessy Telephone Company. This was a company, a British company, making PABX equipment, and their product line included the billing system for telephone use. Now, I understand this was adapted for the tolling application. So special equipment was provided in each toll cabin for each toll collector to collect tolls, identify himself, open and close his lane, and record each classification of vehicle. This is something collectors hadn't had to do before. And the means now to have a paper and machine-based registration of tolls marked this giant shift from what was very much an honesty system. In this new system, a toll collector, when he approached his lane, would see in the cabin a small panel on which was a telephone dialer. And the first thing he would do after turning his cabin on with a switch was to dial his three-digit number. The controller in the control room upstairs would follow this procedure and see that his number was correctly registered. When this was done, the collector was then immediately ready to start collecting tolls. And as he collected the money for each vehicle, he would press a button for the category of vehicles. There were four basic vehicle classes. There was a motorbike, a two-wheeled motorbike, for which the toll was 5 cents. And then there were ordinary cars. The four-wheeled cars were 2 shillings. And heavy vehicles, things that were above the dimensions nominal for a car, were heavy vehicles, and they paid 4 shillings. But this toll system went through this telephone system, and there was virtually no electronics in this system at all. And so there were literally hundreds of these telephone relays, probably even thousands of them at the Harbour Bridge, chattering and clicking away like a modern telephone exchange would have sounded like in those days.